You are listening to WIOX Roxbury, community radio in the Catskills at 91.3 FM, and from the Catskills to the world at WIOXradio.org.
WIOX is supported by Willow Tray Farm in the historic hamlet of Andes, with lodging for up to 23 guests at the newly renovated Streamside and Grapevine Airbnb apartments overlooking Tremperskill Stream. Streamside Yoga, with regularly scheduled classes, and facilities for yoga, corporate, or artistic retreats. WillowDreyFarm.com. Willow, D-R-E-Y, Farm.com. WIOX is supported by Music on the Delaware, presenting vocalist Kim Hawkey and the Elvenel Orchestra, Song of the Catskills, featuring a 9-piece show band and an evening of story and song, covering more than a century of music from the Catskills Grand Hotel era to the post-Woodstock years. At the Walton Theater in Walton, New York, Saturday evening, November 17th at 7:30. Tickets and more information at waltontheater.org or 607-865-6829.
Listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and on MTC Cable Channel 20 and at WIOXradio.org on the web and on any smart device. This is From the Forest every Wednesday with Ryan and John, talk about a different forest-related topic. John, how's it going?
Oh, pure excitement in my veins.
Pure excitement.
Saturday is the Christmas Day for deer hunters.
That's right, yeah.
Opening day.
Should be good.
The weather's looking perfect. We're supposed to get this the snow coming in on Thursday night, Friday morning. Have some snow on the ground on Saturday, so I'm excited.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, it's looking good. So Saturday and Sunday, some snow? Both days, or...?
I don't know if it's going to snow anymore. It's looking like showers, maybe, but definitely Thursday night into Friday, we're going to get that significant snowfall.
What are they talking about, 3 to 8?
Something like that, yeah, 4 to 8, 5 to 8 in the Catskills. Depends on where you look.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Well, what have you been doing in the last week or two? I don't think we've been on together in a while.
I've been doing a lot of bow hunting. The deer are moving, that's for sure. If you don't hunt, you've probably seen them with your cars or seen any roadkill on the side of the road. It seems like I have to brake any time I drive anywhere yeah. In the last week or so. There's a buck getting chased by a doe getting chased by a buck, rather.
Yep, I had to lock up the brakes the other day for a yearling crossing the road, probably being chased, who knows.
Yeah.
Was not fun.
Yeah, I had a buck jump right out in front of me. I had to spike the brakes, and I was going slow because I wasn't in a hurry to go anywhere, and I knew it could happen.
Yeah.
So I was maybe 45 miles an hour and a 55, just kind of cruising along.
Hmm.
And there he was, and I still almost hit him. So watch out. It'll still be bucks crossing the road in the next couple weeks.
That's right. So what are we talking about tonight?
Tonight we're talking about forestry. We have a forester on, Chris Prentice. He's a forester you might encounter in these Catskill Mountains.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's tonight's topic is forestry in New York State with forester Chris Prentice from Lower Hudson Forestry Services. Chris, how's it going?
It's going well. How about yourself?
Ah, we're doing all right. What have you been up to?
Well, been out in the woods in between raindrops and snowflakes. So, been relatively busy.
So, Chris, you are the owner of Lower Hudson Forestry Services, is that right?
That is correct.
And what got you into this crazy field of forestry?
Well, as I was growing up, I grew up outside of Hartford, Connecticut, and the area I grew up in had a lot of woods. And so as kids, we all used to play in the woods. And once college came around, I thought, you know, that might be an interesting field to get into. And that was 25 years ago and been in it, at it ever since.
Huh. And do you live, where do you live? Which county in New York State now?
I currently live in Rockland County. I have another forester who works for me, and his office is in Ulster County, just outside of New Paltz. And we cover generally six counties in southern New York, Sullivan, Ulster, Orange, Dutchess, Putnam, Westchester counties. Do some work in Delaware, some work in Columbia County. So we're spread out across pretty much all of southern New York.
How would you describe a forester, Chris? I mean, what does a forester do? They ride a horse? Do they patrol forest land? What do they do?
A forester in New York is typically someone who is working with private landowners. And helping those landowners make decisions on how to manage their forest land or their property, depending on who the landowner may be. Each landowner has different objectives, and a forester can help those landowners meet those objectives, either it be timber production or recreation or wildlife management. Forester helps those landowners make those decisions and helps them implement whatever they may want to do.
And what do you think most, like, what do people, most of your clients or customers want to manage for? I mean, what are they interested in, do you find, New York State?
In the last probably 5 or 6 years, I've seen a shift. I've seen a lot of people who are really managing more for wildlife hunting, bird watching, that end of the spectrum. Whereas probably 10 years ago or so, it was definitely geared more toward timber production or deriving income from the property. And I've definitely seen a shift. And that's basically because there seems to be a new wave of landowners who are buying properties upstate, typically from the city, Long Island, New Jersey, typically younger, and they typically just have different objectives than what the older landowners had. So
do you have to, did you have to relearn some tactics to adjust and be able to serve those landowners with those, that type of goals in the wildlife habitat venues?
I think it was definitely some relearning. It was going out and seeing what some other foresters or some other landowners in the area were doing. It was taking a look at what some of the hunting clubs were doing, quality deer management, what they were doing on some properties, and, you know, putting together all the info and get yourself a good knowledge base, and then you can implement it on my client's funds.
What is something like when you're talking to a landowner that, you know, the forest is kind of a new setting for them? Like, what is something that is really challenging to explain?
typically with a new landowner, the idea of ever having to do some sort of treatment or cutting is fairly difficult for especially the newer landowners to, grasp is that they bought the property thinking that, you know, it's nature, you don't have to do anything. But to meet certain objectives, you may have to do some cutting, you may have to do invasive species control, things of that nature. And I think from what I've seen recently, that's probably the most difficult thing, is that you don't just leave the forest alone. You actually have to actively manage it to meet these objectives.
If you're just tuning in, tonight's topic on From the Forest is forestry in New York State with forester Chris Prentice. He's the owner of Lower Hudson Forestry Services. Chris, what's the cost of doing nothing? Like, you know, say I buy some land and I'm like, you know what, I just want to do nothing with my forest. What's the cost of that? What is someone giving up, do you feel, as a forester?
Well, I think that they may be giving up a potential income source, especially if they buy a property that may be in the areas that haven't been affected by emerald ash borer yet. And if you just do nothing, all of those ash trees are going to die. But if you actually go out and salvage those trees, you can derive an income source from it. That's one example of basically, if you did nothing, you would be losing out. Even creating trails, roads, things like that. If you didn't do that, your access is limited. Your enjoyment of the woods in some cases may be limited because of limited access or no access. So even some light management is something that can be done and doesn't have a big impact, and it works out for the landowner.
Deer hunting season's this Saturday, so it's kind of fitting to ask this question, but do deer hunters, do you feel some of your customers or landowners are deer hunters? Do you feel that they get it, that forest management fits into managing for deer?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And I see it more and more. I see a lot of the hunting clubs and a lot of people who are interested in hunting, especially in the last few years, have done research or have read in different publications about, doing forest management for deer or for other wildlife. And more I do get calls from some of my clubs asking about doing some heavy cutting, doing some patch cuts. The Young Forest Initiative, the DEC, is promoting. I get calls about that quite often. So people are starting to notice that their forests have been stagnated for 2-3 decades, and they're not seeing as many deer, and they think maybe that managing it or doing some manipulation will help that out.
Yeah, because I remember, 10 years ago, it was common. Not, I don't know if they're the majority, but it was common to hear a hunter say, an older hunter especially, that if you cut, it's going to disturb the deer. You know?
Absolutely. I hear it at my camp still.
You do? See, yeah, there you go, John.
Yeah, from the older guys, they're like, I want to open up the apple trees, and I want to cut a lot of red maple down to open up these apple trees. And they're like, well, we don't burn that much firewood. And also, if you cut all the trees, the deer aren't going to feel comfortable around here. I said, well, no. There's a lot of benefit to cutting some of this red maple out of here.
Mm. Right. And down in southern New York, we have a lot of white pine. And deer, they're really not much habitat that white pine provides. So cutting a lot of the pine out and releasing the oaks is beneficial. And up in the Catskills, it's cutting a lot of the red maple and beech and releasing some of the better quality northern hardwood. So, but it's interesting you bring it up that it's the old timers, and I hear it as well from the old timers that the cutting is not what needs to be done to bring deer back. So it's an interesting dynamic.
So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is forestry in New York State with forester Chris Prentice. He's the owner of Lower Hudson Forestry Services. Chris, what do you think? I like to ask foresters this. We've had a few on. And do you think the Catskills has a healthy forest?
Overall, probably not. There's definitely some landowners in areas that it's probably fairly healthy, but overall I think you could probably say no, and a couple of the reasons are is too many deer in many places, too much beech in a lot of places, especially in the southern Catskills. You're starting to get invasive species, so I think overall, probably, I would say no.
So, to someone listening to the show, we just said there wasn't a lot of deer, and then we say there's too many. What do you think's going on there? Too many deer per habitat, or too many? Like, can you explain the difference there? Because that, I get this question a lot of times, and I catch myself doing it when I'm talking to members of the Catskill Forest Association. I'll say too many deer, and then I'll say too little deer.
Well, I think it's too many deer per square mile for a healthy forest, which, just a couple deer a square mile can eat quite a bit of forest regeneration. So that number would be fairly low for a hunter who may only own 50 acres and in that square mile, that deer may never pass, or only once a couple weeks pass by that property. But in the overall landscape, it's an issue.
Yeah, what do you think, John?
When it takes, 4, 5, 10 years for that seedling to get up above a deer browse level, and that deer's passing by once every couple weeks, that's plenty of time for it to consume it. So you're right. It is all about the relationship between the habitat they have and the numbers of deer that are there. I mean, like Ryan said, we have far less deer than we did 20 or 30 years ago, or even 10 years ago in some places. And it's just because we have a maturing forest all around.
So if we had better habitat, we could have more deer. What do you think, in if you had a perfect forestry world where you could practice anything you wanted, what do you think the Catskills need silviculturally, forest management wise? What do you, if you could do anything, what do you think? What would you do?
Well, I think you could manage it for a variety of different age classes. You could break up. I know this would be in a perfect world, but with the state owning so many thousands of acres, it's a lot of land that's all in the same age class. It's all essentially the same stocking, the same species. If you could break that up and start over in places, start with age class one, and you break that up over time, you'll have a whole bunch of different habitat, a whole bunch of different age classes, and I think you'll start seeing quite a bit more wildlife, even wildlife people haven't seen in many years, grouse and songbirds, turkey, things like that. They'll come back to places that people haven't seen them in a while if you start doing something like that.
Yeah, and I think people are skeptical of it, that large cuts do that. But we have missed an opportunity, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that we only talk about the negative aspects of farming, back in the day, as far as forest clearing. But, man, I think we underestimate all that farm abandonment and what stellar habitat it created. I mean, think about all the cherry that came up in oak after farms were abandoned. Well, I think we took it for granted.
Yeah, it's true. And a case in point would be the state of New York spent millions and millions of dollars here just recently over in Dutchess County buying brush fields and seedling sapling stands because they are interested in maintaining that kind of habitat for a specific wildlife species. So even the state is doing it, and so you're starting to see some landowners doing it as well.
Yeah, I mean, do you think we'll ever have cherry in any significant way again in the Catskill Mountains? Black cherry, a tree that, you know, kind of requires a lot of sunlight, you know? I don't know.
I would tend to doubt it, unless you start doing large-scale cutting like what they do in Pennsylvania. I would definitely doubt that you're going to see the amount of cherry that you normally have seen, or even in the last 15 or 20 years. But I think you're going to start shifting to more maple, more birch, unfortunately more beech, but that's unfortunately the way it is. And you're seeing the same in the oak forest. It needs a lot of sun. If you don't cut hard enough, you don't get that sun. You see a lot of black birch and red maple coming up in the oak forest.
So if you're just tuning in, listening to From the Forest, tonight's topic is forestry in New York State with forester Chris Prentice. Chris, how does one become a forester anyway? Like, what do you got to do?
Well, there's a few different paths. The way I did it was I went to University of Massachusetts Amherst for forest management. It's a four-year bachelor science degree. That's typically one way that someone would go about becoming a forester. there are some technician programs so you can become a forest technician. Typically, they're two-year programs. But most of what the state of New York considers a forester is someone who has a four-year degree and actually from a Society of American Foresters certified or recognized program.
Now, the certified New York State, unlike other states, doesn't have a legally mandated certified forester. Is that right?
They do not. They don't have a licensed forester. So.
What? I don't know if you want to say, but what are your feelings are for or against that?
I've been for licensing for probably the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And I know that other foresters completely against it. Some are on the fence, but I just, you know, if a plumber or an electrician have to have a license, I just don't see why the state of New York doesn't think a forester would need a license. So I'm all for it. Unfortunately, there's quite a few in the state that are not. So
yeah. And so right now it's a certification through the Society of American Foresters. Is that what it is?
Yeah, that would be for the their certified forester CF credential.
Yeah.
So that's really the only credentials that you can get in New York in terms of that.
Yeah. And I mean, so you're a private consulting forester. How does that differ from, say, a forester that works for a sawmill, I guess?
Well, a private consultant would be working for the landowner that hired him or her, whereas a industrial forester or a procurement forester for a mill is being paid by the mill to procure logs or pulpwood or whatever it may be. So in the end, their objectives may be different from what the landowners may be. And so a private consultant is paid by the landowner, works for the landowner, looks out for the best interest of the landowner.
And, you know, I'm sure you get this question a lot, but why not just go directly with the logger? You know, why have the quote-unquote middleman forester involved at all?
I do get it quite a bit. I guess the one big thing I can say is that, especially if you're going to do a timber harvest, a commercial harvest, I typically see 3 to 5 or 6 bids on my timber sales. And from the top bid to the low bid, typically there's a 35 to 40% difference. So a forester can make the landowner more money, typically cutting less trees, and even with the forester's fee, in the end, the landowner typically nets out better than they would if they just did it with the logger.
And what's your relationship with loggers? I mean, you know, what do you think of loggers as a profession? I've heard everything.
You know, I without a doubt respect them, and I mean, I have to work with them every day, and you know, so you build long-term relationships. And you know which ones are good, you know which ones are bad, you know which ones can do certain things, and you know, unfortunately, you're seeing less and less of them. Most of the guys I deal with are late 40s, early 50s, and up. There's a sprinkling of a couple of early 30s guys, but you know, just in the last few years, I've seen four or five guys retire or just call it quit. And so it's not easy. It's hard work, long hours, typically 6-7 days a week through rain, heat, snow, mud, all of that. So it's not an easy job, and I definitely give those guys a hand. So
do you think there's anything else that's responsible for people dropping out of that profession, or
you know, I maybe not dropping out, but I do hear quite often most loggers can't find good help, and I think a lot of the reason is because there's a lot of people today, the younger generation, that don't want to go and work hard. And, you know, logging is not typically the highest paid job around. And so they figured, I can go and work at McDonald's, or I can sit in front of a computer and make as much or more money. So why don't I just do that? And so I hear it all the time. It's almost impossible to hire somebody who can cut trees or who can skid or who can operate a forwarder. So it's unfortunately not only New York's problem. I see it, you know, if you read the magazines or reports, it's all over the United States. So.
Yeah, man, you know, I probably get that almost every day now from members at the Catskill Forest Association, and it doesn't matter which industry. It could be excavating, it could be arboriculture, it could be even the person, John, cutting at the deli in Margaretville was complaining about finding someone. Yeah, it just seems across the board.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I was out in Oregon for the National Society of American Foresters convention last month, and out there a lot of it is mechanized in many areas, and they actually say they don't have a problem finding people to do that because a lot of the younger people grew up playing video games and perfectly fine sitting in a chair and using a joystick and operating that kind of equipment. So it's an interesting difference from one side of the country to the other. So.
Interesting.
So the mechanized equipment, you mean, is just so computerized and mechanical that people convert to it really easy.
Right.
Oh, okay.
They said, you know, a younger teenager can sit in this chair and figure it out within an hour or two, where, you know, the guy who actually owns the machine said it took me a week to figure it out. So it's interesting.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is forestry in New York State with forester Chris Prentice. We're going to take a break, but up next we'll talk to Chris more about this field of forestry.
Mountains high, down the canyons wide, let me roam and ride, ride through timber, when the day is done, by the campfire's gleam, let me lie and dream, dream of timber.
Tall timber's calling, and the echoes ring, for all nature sings a song along the timber trail. Blue shadows falling down the canyon's veil, and the whispering pines entwine along the timber trail. High in the sky above, the love song of the trees will blend and wend its way out on the breeze. Tall timber's calling, and the echoes ring, for all nature sings a song along the timber trail. High in the sky above, the love song of the trees will blend and wend its way out on the breeze. Tall timber's calling, and the echoes ring, for all nature sings a song along the timber trail. The timber trail.
WIOX is supported by Grand Gorge Tire, family-owned and operated, and ready to serve your needs for new and used tires, including mounting, balancing, and anti-corrosive lubricant. Walk-in service welcomed Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturday, 8 to 1. Grand Gorge Tire, on Route 23 between Grand Gorge and Stanford. More information at 607-588-4100. WIOX is supported by the Arc Bowl and Barbecue on Route 28 in Arkville. Now open Wednesdays from 5 till 10 p.m., Saturdays from noon until 10 p.m., and slots are still available for men's, women's, seniors, co-ed adult, and co-ed youth bowling leagues. Information at 845-586-2695 or thearcbowl.com.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is forestry in New York State with forester Chris Prentice. He's the owner of Lower Hudson Forestry Services. Chris, what kind of markets are you finding in the Catskills as far as forestry goes?
Well, the traditional saw log, veneer, markets are all still there. Some species doing well, some species a little bit down from this past spring and summer. Firewood, you do see some markets here and there, depending on who the contractor is. Low-grade pallet markets, that's probably one of the biggest problems in terms of markets in the Catskills. There's not a lot of market for that low-grade material. So either a lot of it gets left in the woods, or if some of it would get left standing as well. So,
do you have to remark your sales because markets change, or they locked in once things get sold? Like I feel like the low-grade market just changes quite frequently, and maybe you had a plan and a marking done, and then things have to be changed.
It does happen. Fortunately, I haven't had to remark any sales. Typically I mark sales and just call the low-grade firewood, and so most loggers either can get rid of firewood or have their own firewood market. But I know over towards the western Sullivan County, there actually is a pulpwood market that way. A few of the Pennsylvania loggers come over, and I've had to hold off cutting because they were put on quota, or they were told don't bring in pulpwood for the next couple of weeks. So it's definitely a dynamic market. You do have to kind of go with the ebbs and flows.
And how do you keep track of all these markets? Like how do you, on your end of things, be able to know to walk into any landowner's woods at any time and be able to say, yes, you know, we can help you out and sell this for your management objectives, or say, no, we really can't do that? And how do you stay on top of those markets?
Well, it's basically being in the business every day. You're always in contact with a variety of different markets, different loggers, different mills. So you're always keeping track of what stumpage prices are, what you know, how to get rid of low grade, how to get rid of pine and hemlock in certain areas. So just being immersed in it every day, you're pretty well on top of what markets are there and what things are worth in different sections or different areas of the state. So,
Chris, why do you think there's no low grade in southeastern New York State?
I think it's just a matter of this last few winters have kind of put a damper on firewood sales. The hope was the pellet plant in Deposit was going to be a big market for it, and it never quite panned out that way. There was a talk of a biomass cogen plant being built at West Point that never materialized. So it's just a matter of there's just no real outlet for it, and I just don't see anybody investing in the infrastructure to build a new, say, a biomass plant or even another pellet plant. It's difficult to do down this way, up further north where there's quite a few more loggers and more capacity. I think maybe it's viable, but unfortunately for southern New York, it's just at this time doesn't seem all that viable.
And, you know, you said you're close to the markets and stuff. Which species are doing well and which aren't?
Right now, ash is doing well. Sugar maple is doing well. There was a drop in oak prices, but I recently put some out for bid, and the bids came in actually pretty well. White oak, chestnut oak have been really strong. Red oak, black oak, like I say, did drop off a little, but they're doing pretty well still. But I think if you have ash, if you have sugar maple, you're going to be doing pretty well.
Anything on black birch, Chris?
You know, I see it a lot down here, and it still moves. I mean, typically a sale doesn't involve, you know, truckload after truckload of it, but, you know, in terms of value, it's kind of middle of the road in terms of the species. So there's no issue with selling it for logs.
And hemlock, obviously, is still low grade?
Still low grade. The only bright spot is that the mill in Calicoon and the other mill in Beach Lake, Pennsylvania, will take as much of it as you'd want and could send to them. And there's actually even an export market for it, I think, up in Deposit now. So hemlock is moving pretty well as pine.
And what about our most abundant tree species in New York State, red maple?
It's doing okay.
as always.
Not as doing as well as it was last year, but you can still sell it, and it does okay. Typically down where I'm at, it's fairly wormy. It gets the worm in it and leaves the black streaks through it. And so, you know, it's not as good as you move further north. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is in these southern counties. But like I say, you can still sell it, and people are still buying.
How about, you probably come across this more than we do, what about yellow poplar and hickory?
Yellow poplar I see quite often, and there's a pretty good market for it. There's the plywood mill in Vermont, Columbia, that's buying it all over New York. There's a few sawmills that saw it fairly regularly. So poplar or tulip is not an issue to sell. In terms of value, you know, it's kind of on the lower end, and it always really has been, but it's not something that you would have an issue moving. Hickory, also on the lower end, not much of an issue moving it. There is occasionally spot markets where you can get really good prices for hickory, but they're few and far between, unfortunately.
It's too bad because, you know, bitternut hickory, I call it smooth bark hickory just to get the confusion out, is one of our tallest trees, you know. I mean, when it grows, yeah, it seems to grow really well. You know, it's too bad.
Yeah, I just I think it's basically a customer preference. Everyone seems to want those lighter white oaks, chestnut oaks, ash, sugar maple right now. And I don't know. I would agree with you. I think hickory is pretty nice, but the market doesn't say that that's the case. So
here's a question, Chris. Like, what's a job that you can think of that you did, and maybe you came back a few years later or whatever, and you're like, you know what? This makes me happy.
Well, it's funny you ask. I actually was doing a bunch of inventory work today on a property just outside of Pine Bush in Ulster County, and we harvested a portion of the property 5 years ago, and so I was coming back 5 years later for the five-year update for the 480A Forest Tax Law program. And going through there, I was looking up, looking around, and taking my plots, and I was like, wow, this is pretty nice. There's nice stockings in here. There's nice timber left. This is going to be a really nice stand in the next probably 5 to 10 years. So I was definitely happy about that.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it must be cool. You know, you're visiting all these properties, managing them, and you get to come back, see what's going on.
Yeah, oh, it's, especially when things work out the way that you hope to. And a few months ago, we did some cutting in Dutchess County, and the objective was trying to get to regenerate oak. And, you know, it's kind of a toss-up if you can get it to regenerate or not. And sure enough, went back, and it was all waist-deep across the entire property. So it just happened to be a stroke of luck. It worked out.
Nice.
Well, so what's your average parcel size for most of your clients? I mean, you probably see a huge range, but what are some of the biggest and the smallest and maybe the average?
Well, the biggest I have is right around 3,400 acres in Sullivan County. The smallest, I mean, I've done work on 6-7 acre properties, I would think the average, I would think that the average is probably somewhere around 60 to 70 acres. And I think I say that because a lot of my clients are in the 480A forest tax law.
Yeah, so they need a minimum of 50 to begin with.
Right. Right.
Chris, so, I got to ask, what was the 6-acre parcel like?
Yeah, what'd you do there?
you can cut walnut in Orange County, and you can make some pretty good money even on 4, 5, or 6 acres. So that's
nice.
What it was.
Nice, so, black walnut, huh?
Yeah. So excluding walnut, what do you think some of the smallest properties you can get on to be able to, you know, work with the landowner and make a timber sale profitable for everyone?
Oh, I would probably say you're looking probably 15 acres.
15.
You know, maybe 12 to 15 is kind of the bare minimum. You know, and it all depends on species, quality, and it depends on what town, unfortunately, you're in. So there's a lot of towns with timber harvesting ordinances, and some are easy and inexpensive, while others are very time-consuming and very expensive. So it all depends.
So you brought it up.
Yeah.
Towns is a big issue, man. I mean, especially in southeastern New York State and some of the Catskills. What is the biggest challenges with working with some of the towns?
I think the biggest challenge is the lack of knowledge about what the towns or the boards are, what they're trying to actually do. So there's a lot of boards, a lot of ordinances that were written not by a forester, not by anybody who had any information about logging or forest management. And I think that's probably the biggest issue. I think a lot of towns put these ordinances in to think we're protecting our trees. We don't want to see them cut. But I see more and more now that towns are starting to realize that, you know, forest management is actually not a bad thing. And it's something that we should probably encourage. So, but there are still many towns out there who just, they do not see that as a viable thing to do on your property.
Well, what are some of the biggest hurdles you see in ordinances in these towns?
Yeah, like what's an example of a ridiculous ordinance?
Oh, there's quite a few towns where you have to go to at least two, sometimes three planning board meetings and a public hearing. And you have to pay a $1,000 application fee. You have to pay an engineer to review the property, and the engineer will tell you, you know, I don't really know anything about logging or forestry, but that engineer will send you a bill for $1,500. You know, some of these towns will cost you $5,000 or $6,000 to get a logging permit.
So any of those small jobs we just talked about are out of the picture.
Correct.
Wow.
Yep.
And that's most of the parcels in your area, I'm sure. The majority of parcels are small.
Yeah. Well, it's unfortunately, it's a problem. And, you know, I don't see anything that's going to change. I mean, it's New York State's a home rule state, and these towns can kind of do whatever they want. And, unfortunately, they're taking the ability of people to do forest management away for a lot of their landowners in their towns just because the parcel's too small.
You know, and I love farming, but it's amazing to me that the same towns can be so friendly in their comprehensive plans and ordinances towards farming, which I feel they should be, and yet treat forestry as a redheaded stepchild. Nothing against redheaded stepchilds. But, you know what I mean? It just doesn't make sense to me, especially when forestry, according to almost all the literature, is just less impacting on water and the land than most farming jobs.
No, completely agree. And it's the right to practice farming in New York State is an extremely strong lobby, and the right to practice forestry, though it's a state law, it doesn't have a lot of backing or a lot of teeth to it. And, you know, that's something that the DEC really needs to step up on, because allowing towns to put in whatever they want in terms of ordinances, it's not in the long run, it's not going to help out the forests of New York. So.
No. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is forestry in New York State with Forester Chris Prentice. We're going to take a break, and we got some more questions for Chris.
Well, the weather for the whole area will continue much the same as the past few days. Temperatures 17 centigrade, that's 49 Fahrenheit. Winds will freshen later tonight to southwest, force 6 or 7. And there will be showers, sometimes heavy in many... Oh, sod it. I didn't want to do this. I don't want to be a weather forecaster. I don't want to rabbit on all day about sunny periods and patches of rain spreading from the west. I want it to be a lumberjack leaping from tree to tree as they float down the mighty rivers of British Columbia. The giant redwood, the larch, the fir, the
mighty Scots pine, the lofty flowering cherry, the plucky little aspen, the limping rude tree of Nigeria, the towering wattle of Aldershot, the maidenhead creeping water plant, the naughty Leicestershire fleshy oak, the flatulent elm of West Ruislip, the Quercus maximus Bamber Gascoigne, the Epigillus levata hueus greenus. With my best buddy by my side, we'd sing, sing, sing. I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. I sleep all night and I work all day.
He's a lumberjack and he's okay. He sleeps all night and he works all day.
Cut down trees, I eat my lunch, I go to the lavatory. On Wednesdays I go shopping and have butter scones for tea.
He cuts down trees, he eats his lunch, he goes to the lavatory. On Wednesdays he goes shopping and has butter scones for tea.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. I sleep all night and I work all day. I cut down trees, I skip and jump, I like to press wildflowers. I put on women's clothing and hang around in bars.
I cut down trees, he skips and jumps, he likes to press wildflowers. He puts on women's clothing and hang around in bars.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. I sleep all night and I work all day. I cut down trees, I wear high heels, suspenders and a bra. I wish I'd been a girly, just like my dear papa.
Because the trees, he wears high heels, suspenders and a bra.
You're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is forestry in New York State with forester Chris Prentice, and I hope people still have a sense of humor. I never get to old that song.
What is that, Monty Python?
Yeah.
All right.
So, you still there, Mr. Prentice?
I am.
All right. So, I mean, how do you think taxes impact forest land in New York State? I mean, because, you know, where you're at in Rockland County is, I would assume, a high tax area. Then there's some foresters who are over in Steuben and some in up there up north in Muskrat Land in the Adirondacks. How do you think they impact forestry and forest management?
Well, I think you can clearly see just by the participation of the 480A Forest Tax Law Program. The majority of the participants are basically, Greene County, Delaware County, and South. I think something like 70% of the certificates are in Southern New York. Taxes are ridiculously high. You see a lot of people, especially September, October, November, when their taxes were due, scrambling to try to pay their taxes. And unfortunately, I think it drives a lot of parcelization and fragmentation, where the only way to do it is to either subdivide or sell off or sell the property altogether or log it. And there's a lot of people who basically will go and cut it as hard as they can and make as much as they can and pay their taxes. And it's unfortunate to see.
Tax is a big deal, and I assume people are telling me the truth, but one of our members, over 600 acres in Mamakating over in Sullivan County, paying almost $40,000 in taxes before 480A, and now, less than 25 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Does that seem right?
For bare forest lands, no, especially when you see what the tax bills are for some of the big properties in the Adirondacks. And, you know, they're essentially getting taxed a couple dollars an acre. And so, it's a huge problem. And, it's unfortunate. And that, you know, $40,000 in Sullivan County, and if you take 600 acres and move it over to Dutchess County, that's an $80,000 tax bill. Mm. So it's crazy, especially for undeveloped, just bare land.
It surprises me. I read so many comprehensive plans, and they all talk about preserving open space, which is naturally forest land. Yet we're incentivizing people to treat their forest as a liability. And what do you do with liabilities? You want to get rid of them.
Right.
And, it's the old saying, the more you tax, whatever you tax, you get less of. And I don't know why we're doing it. It doesn't make much sense. But, man, some of these taxes are quite surprising to me, that's all.
Yeah. I have clients in Putnam and Westchester, and I see what some of their tax bills are. And this is in 480A, and I just, I'm shocked. I shake my head.
God.
It's unfortunately one of the drivers, like I say, for people to sell or for people to parcelize it and, put a subdivision in or sell off house lots.
So we only got about a minute left, and if someone wants to contact you, Chris, how do they do that?
Well, you can give me a call. It's 845-270-2071, or my email address is chris@lowerhudsonforestry.com. Also on the web, www.lowerhudsonforestry.com. So.
Well, Chris, we want to thank you for coming on tonight, and we'll have to have you on again. And like I said, thank you so much for taking the time.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it, and hope you have a good evening.
All right, you too. If you just missed the show, tonight's topic was forestry in New York State with Forester Chris Prentice. He's the owner of Lower Hudson Forestry Services. If you got some forest land, Chris can be contacted. But that's all we have on From the Forest. Next week is Mr. Gary Mead. Like every third Wednesday, talk about a different Catskills tree. Up next is Mostly British with Rick Neblon. Have a good night.
Good night, everyone.
Lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town.